This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 32 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, sponsored by Elite Sports Travel. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're enjoying the NFL playoffs. And we have another special guest for you today. Just before we get to our special guest, let me give you the competition results. So we had, courtesy of Elite Sports Travel, a Super Bowl survival kit up for grabs. And our winner, pulled out at random, was David Goss. So David, congratulations. We will be in touch shortly. And if you want more information on Elite Sports Travel, then go to elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. So let's get to this week's episode then. It's with a good friend of mine, a guy who I've got to know very well over recent years and to work with on Sky Sports NFL. He is from the Around the NFL podcast. Here's my conversation with Greg Rosenthal.
Sundays were like my favorite day of the week to just watch the Patriots. They weren't very good usually. But then, you know, NFL primetime, everything else. I just remember like hating going to my grandfather's house every Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern. So that was like halfway through the second games. And like my family would think I was so rude, like running up, you know, he lived about an hour away, like running up to his bedroom to watch NFL primetime there, or like at least get 5 minutes there to watch the game, but between when we were going out to dinner and things like that.
Fantastic. So who were your sort of the early players then? What put me in the era? What sort of, who are we looking at?
Oh man. I mean, non-Patriots, Randall Cunningham, I remember. Like you would watch those highlight tapes and like the top 10 plays at the end of the year. And, you know, I always remember that play he made to Fred Barnett where he's just running around and it's like a 100-yard throw.
Yeah.
That sticks with me a lot. The Patriots teams were generally bad. I love Doug Flutie for that year too. He was with the Patriots. I saw him win a game with a rushing touchdown in Foxborough. That was the first game I ever went to against the Colts. I think they won 4 or 5 games that year, but that was one of them. All the like big play wide receivers were my guys. So Irving Fryer, Sammy Morgan, I mean, Hartley Dykes was a big disappointment. Some of these guys went and helped out your Dolphins, but those were the guys that stuck in my head as like my favorites.
I saw Randall Cunningham play at Lambeau in 98. So he was with the Vikings by then. And it was Randy Moss's like big coming out party. And Randy Moss went off, I think about 160 yards, 3 touchdowns. And all I remember thinking was how much I loved watching Randall Cunningham play for the Eagles as a kid. I don't think I was even enjoying watching him for the Vikings. And it was just a... But he was, do you remember he came in? He used to come in just on third downs as a rookie.
I don't remember that.
About tough sitch.
I think that was what was unique about football. Not just that like Sunday felt like, you know, a holiday and my favorite day of the week. Cause I love baseball and basketball too, but Sundays were just different. But that, and maybe it was because the Patriots were bad, but I think a lot of people have this experience that it wasn't just my local team that I enjoyed watching. I was just as into watching, you know, Steve Young and some of those Oilers teams and like the non-Patriots teams. And that was different than other sports.
So when did you kind of decide you wanted to be a writer, wanted to be a journalist? Take us through that. And was it always with a view to, okay, I want to write about the NFL? Or did you think I'm going to be a writer first?
No, I fell into it. I, as a kid, that is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to go to school for it. In that, like, to do broadcast, to basically do something similar to what we did now, broadcast journalism, whether it was sports or not, but probably sports. And then I got a scholarship to go to this, to Tulane in New Orleans, and it didn't have any journalism. And I sort of just started like drinking and taking political science and lost a little bit of my focus, to be honest. And I worked out here in Los Angeles for a couple of years. And I started a baseball blog and I was working at Fox Sports on the weekend, but I was mostly working in entertainment for 2 years and really got sick of that. And it took me until then, I was about 25 to realize like what it took me getting that job at Fox Sports on the weekend to realize, why am I not putting everything I can to working in sports? So it was more about sports than it was about writing necessarily. But I was able to get a full-time job writing about fantasy football with Roto-World you know, sometime later after that. And so it really fell into sports, but it didn't matter if they had assigned me to baseball or basketball, I would have taken that.
So it's interesting because I've told you this, you guys this before. I listen to the pod all the time. I listen to the Around the NFL podcast. I love it. I think like so many of the British listeners, we get you. I think you get us. But whenever I hear people talk about fantasy football in there, you kind of straight bat it. You don't really entertain it, which is interesting then to hear that that's kind of where you got your break in NFL.
I should maybe more. I think it's because I got burnt out on it.
Right.
But yeah, not just a break, but I mean, the first couple of days I had that job, I realized like, I can't believe they are paying me for this. Cause it was 2004. It's pretty early internet days. There were not a lot of people getting paid full time to write about fantasy sports in general. It was a very small operation. And within a couple of days, I was like, I'm holding on to this as long as I can until they kick me out. I'm going to do everything I can to stay because this is too much fun. And like, that's only because of fantasy football. They were like, there would have been no path to get in without a real journalism background and not an ex-player or anything. And I would have been perfectly happy doing that for the rest of my career. I really would have. It just sort of ended up falling into, you know, this merger we had with NBC and getting opportunities to write in non-fantasy. And then once I like had a new challenge, like I wanted to do that, but I could totally see myself being obsessed with DFS daily fantasy. If I left the business, I was all about like making some money. I was into the high stakes leagues. I was into all that.
Tell me about the route then from that to the Around the NFL podcast and to working for NFL.com. And so along the way, if you were, Pro Football Talk. So did you have to do kind of hard reporting as well? And then it becomes a little bit different.
Roto-World sort of led to NBC, which led to Pro Football Talk. And that was like blogging, but immediately found out people read Pro Football Talk. And, you know, if I made some comment about Javon Walker, you know, whining about his contract, his agent would immediately text me.
Right. And so suddenly it has consequences.
Right. Exactly. It was still more aggregating and it was just like 7 days a week. It was very similar to what I did at Roto-World, which was just follow the news. You know, even though Roto-World was fantasy, it still was kind of like a news operation. I had sources, but it was more, you know, filtering things out, trying to see who was BSing. And it's not like I was Adam Schefter out there. Sometimes Mike Florio would like send me stuff that he wouldn't want to be a part of, the Ben Roethlisberger sexual assault stuff in Milledgeville. Yep. Actually was like the only major story that I broke because it had an NBC connection. So like occasionally I had to do some real reporting.
So which hero did you meet first along the way?
Well, Chris Wesseling worked for me at Roto-World. So okay. I had never met him and I was always looking for people there. And I read this fantasy football blog he had called Sons of the Tundra. And it was about dynasty football. And I saw this post he put up of the top 250 players in dynasty football, which means you keep them forever. And I was like, this is the best written thing I've ever seen. I need to hire this guy. And so he started doing the news for us. And usually people really struggled at that. It was like a quick hard learning process, and he was awesome immediately. So he started working for us at Roto-World, and then we always, you know, even while I was at PFT, I still was involved in Roto-World, and we always kept in touch. And when I went to NFL some years later to kind of start a quasi Roto PFT there, I brought Chris along as soon as I could, which is about 9 months after I got there.
So that's the hence the old boss nickname.
Right. Well, I was Mark and Dan's boss too at NFL. So I was, you know, hired there to help kickstart this Around the NFL blog. They had already started it without me. I mean, they were going, Mark and Dan, but we ramped it up. We got to hire Chris. You know, we eventually started the podcast. And that's where I was the boss. But I got out of that business. It's no fun. I know you've been a boss too. It's no fun.
Well, I don't know if I could be a boss to Dan Hansis.
Yeah, that was challenging. That was tough.
Good question you.
Especially when we were all like, you know, we were all friends. And
yeah.
And I realized it was very difficult to be friends and be someone's boss at the same time.
Yeah. You guys, it's interesting the different routes you took then? Because none really the conventional, I mean, Dan's maybe was a bit more conventional, right? But Mark yep. went off and became a free spirit and then came back to football.
Right.
Different routes.
Totally different. Yeah, Dan's was a little more conventional, and he ended up doing sort of the Hollywood thing too for a few years. and you know, Wes was delivering pizzas and doing odd jobs in Tybee Island when he started writing fantasy for us. I mean, he told me that was sort of a low moment. And, you know, he was in his 30s and everything. And even that was a slow buildup to that being like a full-time job. But I think it speaks to what early internet days were like. Don't think, you know, it's like a clear path, but it was sort of like, if you could just start doing it, then they would let you do it.
What about, how quickly do you think you kind of, when you started doing the podcast among yourselves, did you think, well, we're kind of onto something here? Or were you just almost at that stage, just like, you know what, we just enjoy this. We just enjoy each other's company.
I was always huge on podcasts as a listener, like from when they first started in like 06, 07. And I was always bugging my old boss at RotoWorld to try to start a podcast. So I always thought, I really did think there was massive potential in podcasts. I didn't know if we were any good or not. And we were kind of sneaking around behind our boss's back. Like initially we had to have one person down at the desk while the other three were in the studio. And we would like call them on the phone to be part of the podcast. Cause you know, they did not really consider that part of our job. And we just tried to do it, you know, on our own and extra and use the facilities that were there to do it. And it really took years to kind of convince them that this was a worthwhile endeavor.
I'm going to talk a little bit more about the podcast in a second, but why don't we do a little game of which hero? So I'm going to find out a bit more about all these ATM.
The last heroes. Time you did this was at this like spawn, you know, this event.
Yeah, it's not going to be like that.
Fans in the UK. And it would have been great if it was like our normal, sometimes we do shows in the UK and it's all our fans, but it was like, you know, half the people were our fans, but the other half just were kind of like NFL fans who had no idea who we were. And Neil's asking like, who's the one that gets the most drunk? And they're like, these people are.
Yeah, they're like, funny. What? Well, hopefully everyone will know you, because if they're listening, they watch you on Sky, they're going to know you. Which hero is the best storyteller?
Oh, Mark. Although, you know, everyone, I would say I'm the worst.
If you're in the bar at the combine,
the other three are all really good. I mean, Dan is hilarious. Wes spins yarns like no one else, and he's got great stories because he knows so many characters. But I think Wes would also answer Mark. I think ultimately Mark is unlike any other human I've ever met. So he gets the tiebreaker there.
Because also he'll just drop some random stuff. You're like, you did what? When?
Right, exactly. I mean, Wes has a lot of that too. And Dan's hilarious. But yeah, I would go in Mark.
All right. You love them all equally and all dearly. But which one would you least like to be stuck in an elevator with?
I mean, I'm not answering these things. You're gonna get me in trouble.
No, I mean, it's just, well, yeah, that's true.
Dan and I would probably get on each other's nerves.
After a while, right? I mean, it'd be a few hours. You'll be good.
Yeah, I think we both, you know, we both sometimes like to take charge of things or whatever. It's almost like we're maybe too similar in some ways that, you know, I think we would drive each other a little crazy.
All right. I'll follow up on that in a sec. Which hero would you most like to go on a road trip with?
I mean, this is unfair. It would be fun to go with. Yeah. We all have been together. When I went to Tybee with Wes.
Yeah.
That was like one of the best weekends of my life. One of the best weekends of my life with him and Keisha. We snuck out sort of to celebrate. He had, you know, gotten through the first time he had cancer, and it was like the next spring. And so it's kind of the people that Wes introduces you to is a big part of it. So I would go Wes. He knows people all over the country, so you'd always find someone he knows.
So you mentioned yourself and Dan. You might, if you were stuck in the elevator, there may be a problem after a few hours. We'll at least give you that. It's a few hours first, you'll be fine.
I think we would be fine. This is more like maybe 2015 me.
I think you hear you on the podcast. You don't pull any punches against each other, but I know from talking to you all afterwards, you're kind of good afterwards as well, right? I mean, that's what makes it good. I think it's like,
of course,
like four friends, you know, having a heated discussion at times.
Well, I think I'm the one that does pull some punches because I'm such a jerk that I had to sort of I had to dial it down. I'm a little like your friend Henry Hodgson, who it's like I didn't realize that everyone isn't such a jerk. I mean, like my family growing up and all my friends growing up, like that was how I feel like that's how we just were around each other all the time, was just like mercilessly busting balls. I don't know if that's a Massachusetts thing. They call us massholes. It might be that.
I heard that term. Do you know who told me that term? I'd never heard that term before. Do you know who told me that? Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck told me that term. Mm-hmm. He said all Patriots fans are massholes.
Yeah. I try to separate myself from that a little bit, but I know where it comes from.
But I think that's partly why you connect, I think, over here. That's a very British thing. We do that all the time.
That's where I say
it.
Like Henry here is the only one that comes in with, like, on a text thread or when we're all hanging out at a bar or something. He'll come even like stronger with some zingers than I do that people just don't know how to react to. And so that's why I love Henry.
I mean, I'll probably zing you guys more on Sky Sports than I do Jeff Reinbold or Sean Gale, because I don't think they'd get it as much.
Yeah. Sometimes I try it with Sean Gale, and then it's like he's like, well, actually, I was the captain of the greatest defense of all time. Who are you again?
Yeah, you don't want to try it too much. You must be delighted with how you guys have been received in the UK from the fans, and to the point where I came along last year to one of your shows before that. We did the show together in London, and then you had your own show the next night, and I just came for the night out, and it was great. And mm-hmm. to see how you guys are taken to by the British fans, and to, for me personally, to have you as part of the Sky Sports coverage, it's been fantastic. You must be really pleased and quite surprised, I guess, when you think back to where you started.
Yeah, it's overwhelming and almost embarrassing when we're there, but in a great way. I think the other guys would agree. It's one of the coolest surprises that, you know, of our jobs, of anything we've ever done, is the reaction we have there. And we, you know, we love everyone there. And look, I doing the Sky stuff with you really has like a special place in my heart, because like that's sort of what I imagined when I was 15. Right. Being able to get to react live to like the biggest moments, like being in the booth, even if it's only for a few minutes, being in the booth with you right as we're going to the fourth quarter of Chiefs 49ers or right after the game in some of these divisional round games. I mean, man, that's it for me. That gives me a lot of juice.
Hey, you were the only one in that Super Bowl last year that was telling us it wasn't over, right?
Yeah, and I've only brought it up like 25 times since to your producer, Mace, because I called him out on the you're like, producer saying, is this all over? Like, come on, this is Patrick Mahomes.
You can have that one, and you can have telling us that Nick Chubb was about to go off in the wild card round. And
there we go.
3 minutes later, he takes it to the house.
It's a good thing about our jobs. Like, you don't bring up the other million times that you got things wrong.
We'll be back with more on the Neil Reynolds podcast after this short break.
Hi, Neil. Gary here. Slightly earlier than usual on the podcast, I know, and I'm interrupting your little chat you've got going on with Greg, but I'm doing it all for good reason, because I just wanted to talk about our presenting partner, Elite Sports Travel. Now, at the top of the podcast, when you made your introduction, you gave away one of the Super Bowl survival packs that Elite Sports Travel have been sending out to their clients this year. And I just wanted to take you back by 12 months to take you to Miami, take you to the heat of Miami ahead of the Super Bowl with the Chiefs against the 49ers. Because before proceedings got underway there, as memory serves me right from the stories I hear, you were a guest at one of Elite Sports Travel's events ahead of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was a really good event. It was really fun. They basically took over this really kind of swanky club right on the beach in Miami, and we hosted a kind of Q&A, a fun evening. We met all of their clients, and it was myself, Jason Bell, Mike Carlson. I'll tell you what I was struck by, Gary, was how happy every one of their clients was to be there, and B, and this is genuine, I came away that night thinking, I wonder how Elite Sports Travel make a profit, because they spoil their clients so much. I mean, it was this great event. There was like the drinks were flowing. You know, we were all there entertaining them. And I just thought it was really good. And for a fan,
I think obviously you're going to get your Super Bowl, you're going to get your tailgate party, you're going to get all of that. You're going to get a hotel to sleep in. It's how do you differentiate? How do you separate? And it's the extras. It's giving those little extras. And so those kinds of events, I think, are really nice touches. And yeah, it was actually a really, really fun event to work. And I'm sure, and I hope for the clients that were there, they really enjoyed it. They seemed to anyway.
A swanky event where the drinks are flowing. I think I'm going to LA next year, Neil.
Well, then you need to sign up to, you know where.
Perfect.
Yeah, elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. But yeah, it's, you know, I am very, you know this, Gary, I'm very, very careful about my kind of image and who I team up with and who I work with. I would happily vouch for these guys. They're first class.
So for anyone who wants to get that sort of treatment, that level of customer service from Elite Sports Travel, Neil, just remind us of how they can do it ahead of the Super Bowl in LA next year.
It's elitesportstravel.co.uk/Neil Reynolds. Sign up there.
Perfect. Now let's get back to that conversation that I rudely interrupted between Greg and yourself.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
So you're very popular in the UK, maybe apart from the time you came on stage with me in Piccadilly when you wore your West Ham United shirt, right? I mean, that's
I was looking around because I just had it. I actually put it in the background of my Sky hit. I don't know if you noticed this a couple of weeks ago for a couple hits. I put it in the background.
That's how you divide a crowd. As soon as you pick a Premier League team.
Yeah, your buddy Nat Coombs got me on board. He knew I'm not going to pretend I'm like a diehard, but in the off season, in the mornings, I'll flip it on and watch a little live sports. I was looking for a team and he got me onto West Ham. It's like I had a little, you know, too much success with the Patriots. I wanted some mediocrity to humble me.
You need to have some tough times. Let's talk a little bit about covering the NFL and going around to different events. Well, let's start there, covering the league in a pandemic. I mean, this is normally a timeless podcast, but you know, we know the Super Bowl is coming up as we're recording this. It's going to be a very different one. It's been the first time in 10 years I haven't been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it'll be the first one since Colts when they beat the Bears that I haven't been. Wow. So it'll be really different. This year wasn't as different for me as a lot of my colleagues who travel all year. You know, we do everything out of the studio. So, you know, I've not been to the NFL Network offices since, you know, March, not even one time. I know you've been going to the studio. And so that's all very different. I'm doing this out of my bedroom and the whole season out of my bedroom. But for people that travel a lot, and I used to travel more and I used to go around, you know, go travel every playoff week. It was really different. And yeah, this will be different, but there's a million negatives. I have looked at the positives, which, you know, not just not driving home late at night, but having my kids in the house, like being with them on Sundays, they're super into the NFL. Now I'll get to be with them for part of the Super Bowl and everything. It's pretty cool.
What sort of league events did you really enjoy? You know, was it like the combine? Was it the Super Bowl week? Or, you know, for me, it's I love training camp. You know, I love training camp. And I think probably because I was quite fortunate that NFL or Sky would just send me, I'd hook up with a camera so I could kind of just drive wherever I wanted and go from one camp to the next and actually not really work. So I kind of enjoyed that. But what about for you? What are the things you really look forward to each year?
I love camps too. That's a good call. You know, the Super Bowl experience, once you get to the game day, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite is owners meetings. you know, not just because they give us a good swag bag. I really mean, it's just like, it's a league event and it's chill. Free agency already happened. It's not freezing like, you know, the combine, you know, the combine has its charms too, but the coaches and the owner, and I don't really care about the owners, but the coaches and the GMs are all there and they'll never be more relaxed. It's probably the one spot where like not that we're all equals, but we're all there. People go, you know, it's relatively few people there. It's a great 4 or 5 days. It's a perfect time in the calendar, late March. And so that was like the first thing that was canceled, actually. I mean, other than, you know, going to the work for free agency last year, and, you know, that's going to happen again. So we'll miss two straight. That's usually late March.
Tell me about a couple of, obviously, interviews, press conferences, anything like that, memorable ones that stand out for good or bad reasons. I'll give you an example of one of my worst. My worst one was Jeremy Shockey. I told this story on the podcast before. Jeremy Shockey tried to run out the back of the training camp building at Millsaps College in Mississippi to avoid being interviewed by me. Couldn't climb over the fence out the back of the locker room, so then had to do the walk of shame past me to say, sorry, I just don't have time. After he'd tried to climb the fence, got halfway over it, realized he couldn't get over it. And then interviewed him about 6 months later in London, and he was so drunk, every other word was a swear word, so I couldn't use the interview anyway. So Jeremy Shockey's up there for me. Have you got good or bad?
Drunk ones are bad. Another Roethlisberger thing. I had information through PFT. This has nothing to do with his sexual assault thing, which came later. That was the Tahoe event. But I had information about an injury that actually hadn't been revealed during Super Bowl week between him and the Packers. It's funny, I can't even remember the total details of it now, but we reported it just minutes before their press availability, and in racing like across town to get there so I could be the one to ask the question, because, you know, we were the ones that reported it, and they weren't, and I can't even imagine this happening now, but he wasn't really quite ready for it because he didn't know it was out. You know, we put it out basically right as it was happening that he was going to be on the injury report, and it was just like a very cold and surprised, like icy back and forth for about four or five questions, but it was good. We made some news.
Just awkward, or you're good with it?
I mean, it was incredibly awkward. And I think I was young and dumb enough, not having experience, that I was like just panicked and trying to get there in time.
Right.
But I started it and was only a couple feet from him and was like, no, I was more fired up. Like, I mean, that got me go. I was more like fired up. That's like, hey, we're making some news here. Like, I never liked Roethlisberger. Screw this guy. Some good ones though. Like, Frank Gore is one of my favorites. Wade Phillips. I mean, but we shouldn't go all negative. Those were some great interviews.
Yeah. Tell me a couple of people you've liked, you've met, you know, that you think, wow, that's a good guy, you know?
Yeah. Frank Gore, I once sat down with him for 30 minutes and man, he's the best. Wade Phillips over the years did some features. He always had great stories about what the NFL used to be like. I'm big into history.
Yeah.
You look like you had a similar experience.
I did. Wade Phillips came over and worked on the draft at Sky Sports. And before we did the draft, because the draft was overnight, we went to the Oval Cricket Ground and we did one of those fan events that we did. And if you're doing a 2-hour fan event where Wade Phillips has his guard down and is just sitting there telling stories. Oh my goodness. You want to talk about storytellers. Wade Phillips was just fantastic.
Exactly. Anquan Boldin was another one. I can't remember falling in love with in Darnell Dockett from that 2009 Cardinals team. I can't remember ever falling in love with a team covering them as much as that 2009 team. I love Darnell Dockett, man. He was great.
Fantastic. What about a wow moment? So I guess, again, just a moment where maybe you were, well, let's have, it can be two. It can be
in
one
a
you
game
might have.
Or what?
So, yeah. Or, wherever. It can be actually, it could be both, but away from a game and at a game. So a game for me would be being on the sideline. I was reporting for Sky that day from the sideline when Malcolm Butler jumped that Russell Wilson pass. And immediately I knew I'd witnessed something that would be talked about 30 years from then. You know, because you don't, Super Bowls don't end that way. And so immediately I knew I was I'd witnessed history.
Yeah, that one's number one for me as a Patriots fan.
Right.
Just in terms, yeah, especially because there was like the 10 years between that. And man, I love Malcolm Butler, still do.
So were you in the press box for that? Did you?
I was
you
in the
keep,
press box.
How do you
yeah,
keep
I've,
that
I've
together?
Seen, you know, I've seen the Patriots go, 3-3. They, you know, the first Super Bowl I went to was the one they lost when they were 18-0.
Yep.
And so I've seen them lose three. I've seen them win three. I mean, we're surrounded. It's the three of us. We had our own sort of NFL box. So I keep it low key, but you know, maybe a little fist pump here or there, you know, it's more that I feel embarrassed, like being so happy around, you know, Dan and Mark and Wes, who are just like, you motherfucker.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a while. It's been a while for them. Any other kind of wow moments? If that's number one, what else?
Well, around that's Tracy Porter's interception. Never forget. To me, that's always forgotten when people bring up the greatest games in NFL history. I know, like, that wasn't the last moment of the game, but the 55 minutes before that was as good a football game as I've ever seen between the two best teams, two quarterbacks at the peak of their power. And it was such a surprise factor. And I'll never forget him making the interception. And then just looking at the corner of my eye to my right, I was in the press box for NBC, and the Jaguars press box, the Jaguars owner's box, for some reason, was right next to us. And because they're, I guess, not Colts fans, I just remember looking over and Wayne Weaver, who was the owner of the Jaguars, and their entire box just exploded. Like they had just won the Super Bowl and just going crazy. And that always like stuck in my head. And that was as loud a Super Bowl stadium as I ever remember, as he's running down the field. And I just like, man, that moment, just like, I'll never forget that moment.
Hey, if you were Wayne Weaver as the owner of the Jags, you live vicariously through any other team to get your kicks, right?
Yeah, man, it's too bad.
Let's talk a couple of bits just to finish up. Obviously, you've watched a lot of Tom Brady's career. I know you're a big fan of Patrick Mahomes. They're about to meet in the Super Bowl. Let's start with Brady, because it is incredible. And the stats that he's put together are incredible. I've said this before, the ability to hit reset, it seems. You know, looking at him celebrating after the NFC Championship game looked like it was 2001. It meant as much, maybe more, actually, when you think about where he was at the back end of last season. Why do you think he's been so special for so long?
Oh, man. Because of what you said, that ability to reset, that I think he approaches each year, each practice, each game, like he has everything to gain. And I'm not, and look, other quarterbacks have had drive before, but I really do think he sort of, and it was part of the reason why him and Belichick were so good together, is this crazy ability to never quite believe you've accomplished like anything, and to adjust. Like, that's a mental thing. And, you know, whether it's adjust his training, but more adjust like what defenses are doing to you during the games. I think that's his number one thing, is he's like the coach on the field. I think of that AFC Championship game against Mahomes and what they were doing to him defensively after a quick start in that game. And then if you rewatch that game, like the little adjustments they made and ended up, you know, just hitting Gronk over and over, otherwise that should have fallen apart. That should have been the story of the Chiefs dynasty starting, because Mahomes just pulled off the most amazing comeback ever. And that's Brady at, you know, 41, I think, at that age, or 40, doing that is just insane.
And what about Mahomes? I know you're a big fan. I mean, we all are. How can you not like Patrick Mahomes?
I just think he's the most talented quarterback ever, which I don't think is a hot statement. I mean, I just never seen guy, you know, players always get better, you know, as generations change, but to play with Reed and then combine what Mahomes is mentally, which is obviously like really top level. And I think that's the difference between him now and, let's say, 2 years ago, and what he can do physically, which is just throw the ball and think of throws that no one else would even consider. I mean, that gets me going, because it's like, it's something you've never seen before.
Do you think, I've got two last questions. One's about the general future of the sport. So do you think that you'll see more of that? So more kind of made up throws. I don't want to say made up, because it just kind of tiny bit off script, you know, off balance, off, not necessarily.
Right. Or just ones ones that they tell you shouldn't make. I was just watching, you know, his matchup against the Bucks the first time around, and they had a couple plays where it was just the perfect defense was called. JPP beats his guy right away, and Mahomes throws it across his body going to the wrong direction to like his, you know, to his third read. And it actually was, I think, in the progression, but no one would ever told you to throw it because anyone else would have gotten intercepted. So yeah, I do think Mahomes is unique, but when you look at Deshaun Watson and what Josh Allen does and Lamar Jackson, each one of them have their own little way to create, you know, and that makes the sport more exciting to me.
And future of the sport in the UK, where do you see it going?
I mean, it's only been going up when you got Neil Reynolds, you know, as the face of the coverage. It's been awesome. Don't you think? I mean, I feel like it's been a steady progress. It was a shame not getting the games there this year. I don't know like how many games they're going to end up going, but it's never going down. It's not going to go below four. And I think they'll find a way to get more. I love what the Jaguars, you know, have done. The question to me isn't so much, are they going to move there permanently or not, but just that they're part, like London is part of who they are. And that's awesome. The fact that they're getting Trevor Lawrence. So I just think as the kids, hopefully that are watching Sky Sports now grow up and start having kids, then it's just becomes a little bit more of the sporting culture. And that's sort of a slow growth over time.
Yeah. You can be a part of this, you know, popping the bubbly and celebrating. So yesterday, we're recording this on Monday after the championship games. Yesterday was the second highest watched playoff game on Sky Sports ever. There was, bizarrely, I think because of various channels it was on, the Jags-Patriots championship game, obviously because of the Jags playing over here. That's the number one.
Wow.
Ahead of all Super Bowls.
That's a good one. You know, when you're coming up with like 10-point Tom Brady playoff right. comebacks, people kind of forget that one, but that's a good one.
And yesterday was the second highest, and it broke the record.
Too.
And the week before was previously the second highest. So we keep breaking awesome. Records each week, and you're part of it, which is fantastic.
That it is awesome. And there is something pure about it. I know you're the same, and you know, the guys on the podcast are the same. There is just like a pure love of the sport. That's why I got into it. You get that from the UK fans because you have to work for it a little bit. That's part of it. Like you're not watching it unless you have this pure love for the sport. And that's awesome to me because it's a little less about like my city's better than your city and F you, you know, it's more just like, I like football.
Have you ever had one of those interviews where the person says they're done? Here's the last question. Then they come up with one more question.
I'm in one right now. Do you ever interview someone and then you like tell them it's the last question and then they just keep going
always.
On and on?
I do
on.
It. It's a bit of a habit of mine, actually. Here's the last one. This one is genuinely the last one. I'm going to give you, so this is like fantasy football, but it's fantasy interviews. So you can interview anyone from the NFL world, past or present. Who do you want to sit down with? I'll give you 30 minutes with them.
I think I would do Belichick. It's such a...
Yeah.
It's such a...
Oh, that's good.
Cliche answer, but I've read every book about him and I kind of want it to be after his career is over though. Like I don't want it to be right now. So I would use that caveat. Let Belichick retire tomorrow. And then I'm the first one that gets 30 minutes with him.
See, I have this bizarre thing that I can't get out of my, I actually think, and I've interviewed Belichick one-on-one and it was quite hard work. I've asked questions at press conferences at Super Bowls. And he's kind of shut me down. And thankfully, I knew the PR guy for the Miami Dolphins was holding the mic. And I was like, give me the mic back. And I kind of explained myself. And then Belichick gave me an answer. So I've had some turbulent Bill Belichick experiences. But I actually think he'd be really good as a guest in one of the stage shows that we do.
I totally agree. Or in a setting like this. And I mentioned like I would love it if you retired. But I would love it right now regardless because I would not, you know, I would know what he would answer and what I would want to hear from him. And that would just be more, not just about history, but about like how the game is played. Because, man, he does give you good answers for that. I always take the chance to ask him questions in those settings. I mean, I did it that first Super Bowl I was covering. I couldn't wait to get up. And I still do at the media days. And as long as you're not getting too specific and you get into the football nerdiness of it all, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, my big mistake was I was referencing the Patriots comebacks from the previous season. And as soon as you go to the past season,
no,
you're dead to him, right?
No, the key is either football strategy, yep. especially if you can weave in something from the past, or if you're writing about, you know, like I always often usually assigned myself was I always wrote about the Patriots opponents because it's like, I'm a Patriots fan. I didn't want, and plus they're not that fun to cover anyways. And so if you can think of good ways to ask him about the opponents, he'll give you great answers on them.
I mean, we'll finish there, but you just on that, I remember, you'll remember the game. Do you remember when they beat the Titans 59-0 in the snow in, I think it was 2007.
Yeah, I remember exactly where it was.
I was at Foxborough the week before on a press trip. And we were at Belichick's press conference, and he told us every different way how good the Titans were, and then went out and beat them by 59. Not just how good they were, but that they were great, which he does a lot of. So
yeah, that's amazing.
Cool. All right, man.
He believes it though. He somehow convinces himself that he believes. I believe it. Thank you.
So there you are. That's my conversation with Greg Rosenthal. I hope you enjoyed that for the second time in this podcast. Back by popular demand, let's bring in to master the mailbag, Gary Hayes. How are you, Gary?
Hello, Neil. I have more questions
for
you.
Go on.
I thought I'd come in a bit different this time.
That didn't work, did it? That didn't work. You thought you'd try it. You try something new.
I just can't be creepy. Or maybe I can. I just can't be threatening. Maybe that's what it is.
And yet somehow you managed to pull off both.
Well, I've got some more questions for you. I know I've just asked you all those questions in our little ad break that we had in the middle of that episode. But I've got some more questions for you, if that's okay.
Go for it.
So first question from Ian Smith on Twitter. Now, this is a question that I was going to ask you, Neil, as well, because I always wonder this. So what do you get up to during the off season, Neil? Work-wise and leisure-wise, thank you for the awesome insight and coverage again this season.
I get this question a lot. So I still write. I'm very fortunate that I write and talk and cover the NFL all year round. Now, obviously, it's not as busy as during the season, but I'll just give you a kind of rough outline. You know, for the by mid-March, I'm writing a lot of stuff. I'm on Sky Sports News every day talking about free agency. April onwards is sort of heavy prep for the NFL draft, and then we're doing shows on Sky around the draft. May and June, I write my own preview magazine. So every year I do an NFL preview magazine that comes out kind of probably late July, mid-July. And so May and June, I wait till the draft's out of the way, and then that's heavy writing time because that's, you know, 140 pages, and I'm writing 90% of that magazine myself. By the time you get to late July and August, you're into training camps and then prep for the season. So I do take a lot of time off during that time. I won't lie to you. I mean, it's funny. It's like half the year I work 7 days a week with research and all of that. And then half the year, maybe 3 or 4 days a week. So what do I like to do? So I like to go on holidays with the family. That's gone a bit sideways in recent times, but still was able to get to the Isle of Wight last year. I just like being by the water, actually. There was a period where things opened up in the summer last year, and we were able to get out. And I would set me and my wife and the kids, we would take our dogs down to the beach or somewhere every weekend. We said for about 8 or 9 weeks, every weekend we were by the water, by the sea, at least one day out of each weekend. And that to me is a great way to relax. I like to catch passes from my son as he's training to get out to North America. But yeah, love spending time with the kids, barbecues, lots of barbecues. So yeah, just kind of decompress. But in terms of work, I'm able to work all year round on the NFL, which I'm very fortunate for.
Just no fishing, I heard.
No, yes, of course. And that's how last season's off season began, really, was with the fishing with Fitz. And then I think we all expected a very different few months after that, which didn't pan out. I guess it's just about kind of, yeah, it's going to sound a bit corny, but it's kind of reconnecting with your family, because I spend a lot of time head buried in notes and stats and in a studio. And the summer's when I get to sort of play board games, frisbee in the garden, catch passes, burn sausages.
I was going to say that actually, Neil, because for someone who's got 3 children, a good family life, you must find it so difficult to work so much throughout the season.
It is, but I'm lucky as well. I suppose I work a lot from home, so as soon as I finish, I'm sort of there. So, but it is, and Mrs. R has to do all the heavy lifting in the season, that's for sure. Well, and in the off season, let's be honest.
Well, you know the saying, Neil, behind every great man is a great woman, and there she is, Mrs. R, propping up NFL UK.
Yeah, and then she does all the heavy lifting in the off season as well.
Right, so moving on to question two, which is from Simon. Share my year. I'm not sure if I want to share the last year with you, Simon. So
keep your year, Simon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so keep your year over there. So Simon asks, with Todd Bowles being linked to a number of head coaching jobs, would Bruce Arians retire if the Bucks won the Super Bowl rather than a year of integrating a new defense?
I don't think Bruce Arians is a million miles away from retirement. If you remember, Gary, when we were out with him in Tampa and we talked on this podcast and he said, you know, I tried to retire twice and I failed at it. I'm not very good at it. He's actually been two-time coach of the year since he officially retired from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been a two-time NFL coach of the year and he's coaching in the Super Bowl. So he's not done too bad since his first retirement. Then he went to the TV booth. But I think he's aware that, you know, he's had some health issues in the past. He's 68. He's the second oldest head coach to ever coach in a Super Bowl. I think whether it's Todd Bowles or not, I think he might be grooming Todd Bowles or Byron Leftwich to kind of take over. So I don't think we're a million miles away from Bruce Arians retiring, whether it's after this Super Bowl or in a year or two's time. I think he's aware that clock is ticking, which is probably why they were so aggressive in the roster they built this year to go out and try and win it all.
Friend of the podcast, Bruce Arians, Neil, he just strikes me as someone who, no matter where he retires, whether he's by the ocean or by some other bit of water, that he'd just be sat there trying to relax, but you'd see his right leg just twitching all the time because he just wouldn't be able to switch off because he's a football man to his core, isn't he?
I think that's exactly what he is. And I interviewed him within about 2 weeks after he'd returned to the NFL with the Bucks, and he was like, I just couldn't do the TV stuff. He said, my favourite part of doing the TV stuff was on Fridays before the games on Sundays when we would go to the team's practice. And he said, and then I was on the practice field. So it was all about being a coach again. So yeah, he's a true lifer, that's for sure.
Right, last question this week, Neil, coming from Andy Burrows, who asks, have the Washington football team turned the corner on and off the field now?
I think, let's start with off the field, they were a mess. They were, you know, I think they've become self-aware. You know, I think they may stay as the Washington football team, or they will have a more suitable nickname than their one that they had in the past. I think they're aware of that. I think they've got a head coach in now who is much more about creating the right culture. I don't think the culture was great in Washington. So they did seem to recognize that needed to be fixed. And I think they're on the path to doing that. On the field, they were a playoff team, so that's a great start, but there's a lot more they need to build on. Defense is good. Good young running back in Antonio Gibson. Good young wide receiver in Terry McLaurin. But this is a quarterback-driven league. You know, I think I talked about this on Sky Sports coming into the conference championships. The four quarterbacks that were left were all top five in passing touchdowns in the 2020 season. You can coach around a quarterback, but it's better if you don't have to. So they need to answer that, because I'm not sure Alex Smith is going to be there going forward. I'm not sure Taylor Heinicke is the long-term answer, even though he was fun to watch in that playoff game against Tampa Bay. So that needs fixing. But yeah, they're on the right path is what I would say. So we'll see where they go with it.
Okay, on to next week's episode, Neil. After your lovely conversation with Greg Rosenthal from around the NFL, it's always a pleasure when I get to listen to you chatting to the guys. But who have we got coming up next week?
The feelers are out. The feelers are out for trying to get back to an active player. I've got a couple, probably about four, close to the finish line. Yeah, you never know until you actually get them on the Zoom call. So the magical mystery tour continues next week. Just tune in and you'll see who we've got, because we'll bring you a good guests all the way through past the Super Bowl with Elite Sports Travel. So thanks very much, Gary. Two appearances today, we'll double your pay. Double nothing is still nothing. And thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. My thanks to Greg Rosenthal and to you for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.
by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.